Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Madhyam Prachi. Prachi took sannyas in 2005 and lived in Osho Dham for 6 years. Prachi works in human resources for a huge multinational company. She is responsible for creating a climate that fosters diversity and inclusion in an environment where employees can work productively in a culturally diverse workplace. Prachi facilitates meditation sessions in her company and other educational institutes. She believes that collaboration and increased awareness is what will help people survive and succeed in the coming times. Hello, Prachi. Welcome to the Love Osho podcast. How are you?
Absolutely brilliant. And how lovely to be sharing space with you, Swaram. Thank you.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm so happy to speak with you today. I've known about you through my dear friend Rashid for a long time, and Rashid spoke highly of you on many occasions, saying that you should meet Prachi, you should talk to her, you should, you know, exchange ideas. And he connected us, and he said that you're a great example of a new generation of sannyasins. And also, I know you're involved with the Osho Center in Delhi, and you lived there for many years, and that you offer meditation classes as part of the corporate well-being program within the organization you work for, which is a huge international corporate, IBM. So I'm really excited to discuss all these different topics with you. I can't wait to dive in, but as normal, let's start from the beginning. I'd love to hear how you came to know about Osho.
This was many years ago. This was in year 2000 that a friend gifted me an Osho magazine. And I still remember I was traveling back from work, my first job. I carried the book in the bag and I felt that I'm carrying something extremely significant today in my bag. I still remember that feeling. So yeah, that's how the journey started with his magazine. And that was, the subject was on youth, Osho's, you know, the whole magazine was dedicated to Osho speaking on youth. So that's how the journey began.
So your friend gave you a magazine, you carried this magazine, and it was about youth. So I guess, of course, you must have been young at the time. And what was in Osho's talks about youth that really caught you?
Oh, this was 21 years ago, so I wouldn't really remember exactly the words, but I still remember the feeling. The feeling was that suddenly I thought, oh my God, this is my place. You know, finally I found something, someone, I found home. So that was a feeling. It's quite ineffable, really. But yeah, that the feeling was I'm home.
And you been in India, a lady, 20 years ago. At that time, did you know about Osho controversies? Did you know about Rajneesh and Osho? Or for you was completely something new and you just liked what you heard?
Yeah, this was the first time I heard, I didn't know Osho before that. So I just saw this magazine and I started reading it with nothing in mind, really. So I had no idea of, you know, who Rajneesh was or what was Rajneesh Puram. And yeah, absolutely fresh at that time.
And what happened when probably people or someone or, you know, you yourself came to know about, you know, the sex guru and all those stories around Osho?
Oh, I still remember when I got home with the magazine, my parents were quite upset about it. Especially my father was not happy at all. And that was the first time I got to know that Osho has a reputation. So I remember my father was very upset and he said, he's not who you want to read. So it didn't matter to me actually, because it was something deep within that, you know, as if I'm, as I said, I'm home. I've come to the place. So for me, whatever he said, or many, many people said it afterwards, that Osho is a sex guru and, you know, you don't want to go deeper into it or you'll be hypnotized. Nothing really registered because he had already captured the heart.
That's really beautiful. And it's very mysterious. It's very strange to explain on how some people, they are alarmed by all the stories and they kind of put a brake and they get confused. Whereas other people like you, or even for me, doesn't really matter. I mean, just, yeah. You know, that connection is already so deep and established that, you know, you just hear these noises and rumors, but there is something unshakable deep inside.
Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So where did you go from there? So you got interested. How did you take sannyas, and did you go to any Osho meditation places?
Yeah, so a few years after that, I just kept reading him quite a lot and tried a little bit of meditation on my own. And then I got to know about this place called Osho Dham in Delhi. And I was living in Delhi quite near Osho Dham. Osho Dham is on the outskirts of Delhi and I'm nearby. And soon I found myself in Osho Dham in a camp, a meditation camp. Meditation used, you know, till Corona times, meditation used to happen 365 days in a year at Osho Dham. And I found myself there in a three-day camp. And I still remember that the first evening was Vaitrobe. It was the evening satsang, and I was completely caught. I mean, how can something be so beautiful? Everyone in white, and we were dancing. Everything was so new. You know, I've never seen so many people dancing across generations. People were dancing. They didn't really care about who's watching, who's not. There was no performance. And after the discourse, there was a kirtan played, and we all sang and danced on it. And again, it's very difficult to explain, but you know, that was the first time I got a slight glimpse of like what you call meditation. And that's it. This is how the journey started. So those were the most beautiful 3 days spent at Osho Dham, which was a, you know, practical, like the real taste of what I'd been reading all these years before in Osho books and magazines. So that was really tasting the food that I'd been reading about.
Yes, that's the real thing. So you start with the book, you get that inspiration, there is something inside that moves, but then you also want to have the real experience. And in your case, you had it in the meditation camp. Meditation camp, for people who don't know, is a way in the Osho world where we describe meditation retreats or meditation events. I think Osho used to call meditation camps when he used to organize them. And it's kind of passed on, because nowadays when you say meditation camp to new people, they think of camping, and you know, it's not immediate. Meditation camp means meditation retreat. So, okay. And I understand that you then lived in Osho Dham, in this beautiful meditation center, which is just 30 miles south of Delhi, and is one of the most active and beautiful. Of course, before Corona, as you mentioned, things then changed a lot, but everywhere in the world, of course. But Osho Delhi is renowned for being one of the most active and beautiful Osho meditation centers in the world. So tell me a little bit about the center, and what did you do there for 5 years?
it's a paradise. So in Delhi, as you know, Delhi is famous for its pollution and population, and this is really the oasis in Delhi. So it's a little paradise that Swami Om Prakash Saraswati ji, an Osho disciple, long time Osho disciple, built, and now the place is being managed by his son Swami Atul Anand. So like I said, that meditation happens 365 days a year there. And it's a beautiful green place. And what strikes me the most about the place is the sincerity with which the place is run, the sincerity with which the meditations happen there. and love. There's warmth in the place. It's a very non-commercial place, which is managed or run with a lot of love and dedication for Osho. So almost as if, you know, when I've lived there for 5 years, and I can easily say that you don't really feel that there is someone managing it except Osho. You know, the place is run by his presence. So the management team is there, but their presence is not felt in a very strong sort of way, in a negative sort of way. So that's the most beautiful part, that the place is sincere and really warm. And how I live there is because I used to work for, at that time too, I worked for IBM, and it was about, an hour's drive from there. So I would do dynamic in the morning and have my breakfast, get ready, go to work, come back in the evening, do white rope and stay there. So most of these years were spent like this. Of course, I would go meet my family in between, and there were times when I'd spend my holidays, my vacation in Osho Dham. So it was a mix of that. But that was really the grounding for me to stay in a community like Osho Dham, where people came from around the world. And the fact that Swami Om Prakash Saraswati Ji and Swami Atulanand now, their presence is so strong there, and Swami Atulanand is available for guidance whenever at least I needed it. So, or when I need it. So it really helps to, you know, at that time when you need it the most, I mean, I need it even now, but, you know, at that time when you just start and you, it's a new world, and especially for me, because nobody in my family was really keen on Osho. So it was a lot of, like, you know, my parents were not happy. I was not really ready to get married, and not, that had nothing to do with what Osho said about marriage, but it just, you know, things happen in your life. You don't really plan everything. So a lot of those things were happening, and I found my people, I found my tribe, and I found love at Osho Dham. So, yeah. So that's Osho Dham for me. Was home and still is home.
Wow. So very beautiful. And I think, yeah, in your case, it's very significant as a lady who doesn't want to get married in India, that we know even nowadays, 2021, there is a lot of pressure on young people to get married. And I think there is still arranged marriage. And even in the West, trust me, it's still many people get pressure from their families to get married, because unless you get married and you have children, it's like, what are you living for? You know, what's the purpose of life if you don't have a family? It's almost like this.
Exactly.
The mindset is changing, but of course, it's still there. It's still there in the background. And also the fact that you were with this very controversial spiritual master, and your father didn't approve, but you said, you know, I don't care. I just want to follow my heart. And that's very beautiful. So in Delhi, the commune works in a way where I guess there must be some people who live there full time to take care of the daily necessities to run the place. But at the same time, you are allowed to just have your life, go work in Delhi and come back and stay there in the night, basically just to have breakfast, dinner and sleep. And then you go off for your daily work. Is that pretty much what?
Yes. Yes. Both is possible. There are many people who've dedicated their whole life and they stay at the ashram and manage the place and work in the ashram. And there are people who, like me, who stay there for long or even for short periods. People come for a few months, people come for a few days, people come for years. And there are people who are there full time. I know of people who've left, whatever they were doing, and they're completely dedicated to the work at Osho Dham. And one thing I do want to mention about, my parents, especially because my parents weren't happy at all with my, love for Osho, and the fact that I was, to start with, I was doing dynamic at home. So that really was very upsetting. But, you know, one day, after a year or two at Osho Dham, I invited my parents to Osho Dham for a camp. And they came for 2 days. And they were quite they were quite visibly surprised to see what happens there, because you start 6:30 in the morning with dynamic and you end the day with with the evening meditation at 8:30 in the evening. And it's really, you know, someone who's not so physically active, I mean, you're doing dynamic Kundalini, White Robe, Nataraj, Nath Brahm, and very active meditations. And I know that, like there were years of resentment from my parents. And after those two days that they spent at Osho Dham, they never said a word against Osho after that. And I've been meditating at home since then. And there is, I mean, they're not for it. They don't really do it themselves. But they've never said a bad word for Osho or his people after that. So the, I never asked for it. I never expected them to suddenly change in 2 days. But this is a gift. This has happened.
Well, I like it. I love it. I love what I'm hearing. And I think it's also must have been that, at least this is what happened in my family. They were not like completely against, but they were suspicious. They didn't know, they didn't understand, especially my father. My mom much more open to it. And in fact, my mom turned to be a sannyasin. She loves Osho independently. But there was, you know, suspicion. But if parents really love their children, when they see that the children are happy and their life is improving and they're more relaxed, more loving, more open, more, you know, just more healthy in general, then, you know, if they really love the children, they should be happy for their choices. And, you know, if in my case, Osho really helped me, then it's fine. Osho is fine, you know? So that was for me. And I guess probably with your parents, they can see that you are a beautiful lady and you're happy. So it must be working for you.
Yeah, that's what my mother says now, that, you know, my mind, she says, my mind doesn't know what you're doing. My mind doesn't understand. My mind doesn't really understand it, but I see you happy. So whatever it is, something is working for you and I'm happy that you are happy.
Yes, yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Okay, so you mentioned that when you were already living in Osho Dham, you would commute for 1 hour going to the office, and you were working at IBM. Of course, IBM, we all know, is a big, big corporate organization, international, with offices everywhere in the world. There are, I don't know, thousands and thousands of employees. And you are in HR, human resources, and you offer meditation classes to the employees of IBM. This is something that probably 20, 15, maybe even 10 years ago was almost unthinkable. Whereas nowadays is a common practice. More and more companies, more and more organizations, more and more people actually meditate. So I'd love to hear a little bit what you have seen through these years, through all the time you worked and when you joined IBM to today, with an inside look from a HR point of view. How now these things are changing, where the companies are open to having their employees do a meditation class as part of their well-being. So it's acknowledged, it's recognized that meditation is a good thing for you, and they allow it, and sometimes they even pay for people to meditate, which is crazy. So tell me a little bit about that, which is really interesting.
Yes, Saram. IBM actually pioneered. So we started some 6-7 years ago. At that time, all the meditation mindfulness sessions were happening in person. So I used to sporadically travel to various cities in India and do online meditations for offices outside of India. And to this date, we're doing it. And of course, during Corona times, it started, it increased, the sessions increased. And now we do about 2 to 3 sessions a week across the world. Now that everything is happening online, people join from anywhere, and we do different kind of meditations, because most of the mindfulness classes offer silent meditations. And an IT, a technology company, as you know, has a lot of millennials and a lot of young people. And they really enjoyed Osho meditations, which is gibberish and laughter. And in-person sessions would include dance and a little bit of singing and, you know, all the meditations, shaking meditations and breathing meditations. And they loved it because they were active, semi-active in nature, and silence was so easy after that. So even now, what we do online is a lot of laughter, for sure. We do gibberish and silence. And that is so loved by people. And IBM really promotes it. And not just because of Corona or the mental wellness that has, you know, become so significant. But even before that, meditation mindfulness was quite mainstream at IBM because self-awareness is always thought to be as one of the key pillars to being a leader, a successful leader, where you are inclusive yourself and for the team. And you lead by example. So self-awareness has always been very important, and mindfulness is always seen as a critical sort of way to that. So although there is no spiritual angle to it, I mean, IBM obviously doesn't want us to get enlightened there. But yeah, be more stress-free and be more focused on what you're doing and enjoy life. They want IBMers to enjoy what they're doing or enjoy life in general. So really proud to be able to do this and easy to sort of facilitate the Osho meditations at work.
Well, there are so many things that I want to ask you. The first one that comes to mind is you said that IBM doesn't care about enlightenment, it's not really meditation for, you know, ultimate liberation, nirvana, or being with a spiritual master. In fact, meditation is almost now taken away from anything spiritual, and that's how at the same time it's been accepted, especially in the Western world, as something that you can do. But on the other hand, IBM wants you to be happy. And I think this, even though may not sound so great, but I feel like personally it is great that in the world of business, it's been now accepted that people have the right to be happy and not just be squeezed and work for money. So maybe this is a big paradigm shift. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, gone is the time where you know, companies didn't want their employees to be joyous or at least happy. So it's clear that an engaged employee has to be happy to be able to really bring his or her full selves to work. And unless I as an employee bring my full selves to work, I cannot explore my whole potential. You know, IBM or any other company cannot really leverage my skills unless I'm happy at work. So it's very, you know, it's clear to all the companies and all of the leadership. And it's not just IBM, as I said, it's across organizations now, at least organizations that really care for, you know, their attrition levels going up or down, or what is their external evidence? What do people say about those companies? And IBM especially is, for example, they really care about what's the gender balance at the top. You know, they really want, for example, men, women, transgender people to be seen, to be treated equally and to take on senior roles at the firm. So an environment like that is fostered, an inclusive environment like that is fostered only when people are happy. And it's clear that meditation is the way. And we do a lot of work on unconscious bias as well. So for that too, clearly meditation is the way.
I think this is a big thing because it's a massive cultural shift that is happening, and it's happening in the last maybe 10, 15 years, and nowadays more and more and more. and it's been led by big organization, but it's trickling down to all the small firms. You know, nowadays, if you're a startup, you know, well-being is clearly at the top of the priorities. And people are aware of this. People understand the value of having, you know, work-life balance, the importance of well-being, of being happy. And this also means that many young, talented people who historically would escape the corporate world because you feel like completely squeezed and you don't like what you're doing and what you're seeing. Perhaps you even like your job, but you don't like the environment. So you leave and you escape. And nowadays, some people can actually have a good life even with a full-time job. You know, I don't know about you, but it seems like you have a good profession. At the same time, you are allowed to do things you like. You can share meditation. So there is no need for you to leave the company to just go somewhere and meditate. You can combine the two.
In fact, that has happened naturally for me. And I don't know, I never asked for it, but you know, I've spent 11 years at IBM, and 3 years ago, my manager asked me if I'd like to lead diversity and inclusion at IBM. And I wondered what it would be like. And I have loved every bit of it in the last 3 years. I'm loving the role because it's very close to meditation. You know, one cannot be inclusive unless there's some amount of awareness, some amount of meditation that happens in your life. It remains to be lip service to say that, oh, I want women to do well, or I want people from the LGBT plus community to do well, or I want people with disabilities to do well. I mean, unless I'm as a leader, I'm able to see my own bias. You know, what happens to me when I see a homosexual person, or what comes to my mind when I hear the word nurse? You know, why does a woman come to my mind? Hey, you know, interesting. This is my unconscious bias. And self-awareness is the thing that helps me see that. So somehow it has happened that my role over the years has come very close to my interest. And it's working really well. And even, as I said, 6-7 years ago, IBM gave me an environment where it was easy to facilitate mindfulness meditation sessions across the world. And that was a big deal for me because it was close to my heart and I was able to do what I loved doing the most.
Yeah, so wonderful. And also at the same time, many, many more companies and young people, especially in the startup world, but even in the big organization, there is a pressure also from the employees to be more meaningful, to do things that have more meaning. And it's not just about profit and growing numbers, but it's about what are we doing here? Are we doing something, you know, are we just selling some food that is going to contribute to people being more obese and unhealthy and die earlier? Or are we contributing to a better world by what we're doing? And that can be anything, you know, producing computer, better internet connections, all the way to, of course, you know, social, the environment, or helping directly people in need. But it can be anything that a company does can be helpful for the world. I mean, IBM maybe, you know, it's not something that you think immediately when you think about improving the world, but, you know, what you do is used by many people, you know, and the way you do it can also be very much more human-centered.
Yes, and I'll tell you, recently I attended a workshop where, you know, one line which stayed with me. It said that inclusion is a business imperative, and if we only say that, or if we believe that inclusion is only a business imperative, it is quite lopsided. And it is actually a human imperative too. So it is a business and a human imperative. So you can do good and be competitive in the marketplace. And I thought, you know, coming from a business professional, that is so profound, that to be inclusive is very human and we must do it because it is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I love it. Look, Prachi, going back to what you mentioned before about the meditations you offer, of course, we all know about mindfulness. And mindfulness, to give credit to the people who kind of packaged mindfulness in a way that is acceptable to the Western world, which at the beginning I felt like it was compromising and it was not real meditation. It was just something really, you know, baby food for the Westerners who don't know anything about meditation. But in reality, at the same time, people now are much more open-minded and accepting. So that's a very positive, good thing that happened. But also there are some limitations when it comes to the effectiveness. At least, you know, there are lots of studies that show how mindfulness is beneficial and meditation is beneficial. And, you know, there is no one can argue with that, and with another one too. But at the same time, the experience of people starting meditation with the passive technique, sitting silently, closing their eyes and watching the breath and trying to be present, it's far away from the reality of actually enjoying that experience. You know, it can be very frustrating. That's my experience, and I'm sure the same for many other people. So what you are introducing in the workplace is Osho's approach, which is more to start with activity to help people then be able to relax and enjoy mindfulness, if you like. It's not the starting, it's the end.
Yeah.
So, and you mentioned you use laughing and gibberish, which are really working very well. And I'm curious to know how people are actually open and receptive to these techniques, which it sounds a little strange, you know, if you think if someone new that goes into a meditation class and the meditation teacher is asking you to laugh or make sounds that have no meaning. What's your experience?
My experience has been really good. And I'm not just talking India, I'm talking across the world. And every Wednesday we get together for an hour and we laugh for some time and then we even do Gurjeev movements for some time and we do gibberish and there's silence. So I have never really, so even when it, you know, most of these sessions are called mindfulness sessions, but it doesn't really matter because, you know, we basically do Osho meditation. So you can call it whatever. For me, it's Osho meditations. And I tell them this is an Osho technique. And I have faced no problem at all. So when they ask me, okay, yeah, of course, there are people who would find it very difficult to laugh. And therefore, there are people who've been doing it. And you know, if I'm leading it, then I'm laughing. And it's very contagious. So people start laughing and then they do it. They come twice and they come three times. And I can... You know, I can show you letters, like IBM emails people have written to me from various countries saying, I did this laughter gibberish silence session for like seven times in, you know, every Wednesday with you. And I'm just so happy. It's just so good. And I find a peace within and I'm more emotionally sort of stable and I hope that you'll continue this and we'd be able to do this in person sometime. And all of this is happening. Gibberish, again, I simply explain it to them that we're doing it because our mind is working nonstop and it helps us to sort of confuse the mind or stop the mind. And that's it. We start. Some people are too shy in the beginning and then some people are doing it. And definitely the facilitator is doing it. And then it, you know, they see, oh my God, it's working. You know, I'm liking what I'm doing. I'm being childlike and I'm enjoying it. So, and then when there's silence, then you know, even if you've done a little bit, you do somehow it's magical. You know, his presence works and they get whatever they get and they come back to it. And now we have a demand for these sessions. Laughter, it's called laughter, gibberish and silence sessions.
Oh, that's so amazing. It's really amazing and encouraging because I don't know about many people doing this in a company like IBM. Of course, there are many sannyasins and many Osho lovers offering Osho meditations around the world, but not at that level, not through Zoom, not as part of the HR, encouraged by the company itself. So you're a great example because the way I see the future of the workplace is a place where people will want to meditate, but not just the traditional meditations, but Osho meditations, because those are the meditation that work and are more suitable for the modern man. There is no doubt. You know, we just maybe need more people to start sharing them. And of course, hopefully at some point you need some science, because, you know, without science, you don't go anywhere. But it's also the demand of people and the experience that they get immediately, because as you said, you know, someone can do a session of few and immediately feel the difference and the benefits. So I'm so happy to hear that you're doing it and you get such a great feedback. And you mentioned it's not just India, because of course I've been to India. We all know in India, people are much more open to laughter and dancing. And it's not so difficult to make people laugh and dance in India compared to some parts of the world in the West. So that's if I think, for example, I lived in England for many years, and the average, we are generalizing, but, you know, the average English stereotype of person is not so prone to laughter and dancing and moving the body. So I kind of struggle a little bit to picture that happening. But yeah, have a good feedback even from people in the West, right?
Yes, absolutely. So on an average, we have about 60 people from all over the world. And almost all of them laugh. And some laugh quite loudly and some would be shy. And, you know, I know this IBM, a friend from Israel, who joins now every session. But in the beginning, he was like very, very shy and he would not even keep his video on while laughing. And now, you know, like 10 sessions down, and he's the one who's almost leading the laughter. His laughter can be heard loudly, and he's just simply so happy with that. So yeah, as I said, his presence is, you know, it's very simple. You just start it and he does his work.
I love your attitude and your trust, and you are so easygoing. And I'm sure a big part of the fact that people feel that something is happening is also because of you as a facilitator, because the role of the facilitator, in my experience, is simple. You know, the facilitator should not overdo it and think that it's all about you. But at the same time, if the facilitator is in the right space and the right place and the heart is where it should be, that's the difference. It makes a big difference.
Thank you.
Okay, Prachi. So we are kind of heading towards the end. I mean, I'm really enjoying discussing with you this topic, which is so dear to my heart. And you're such a great example. I think Rashid was absolutely right in recommending me to connect with you and discussing with you these topics. And I really encourage everyone who is listening, who might be working or in HR or just as an employee in any of the companies, to start asking for different types of meditation. If your company offers meditations, that's great. Then the next step would be, you know, instead of traditional mindfulness, why don't we try something different? And maybe they can get in touch with you. You can share with them your experience and just
Everybody's welcome. I'd absolutely be happy to share the little that I know. And I do want to mention, Suram, that apart from IBM, there are many other firms which want mindfulness meditation to happen at their workplace. For example, Google invited me to facilitate a meditation session for them, and some other companies as well. And there was even a talk held by a company called Women in Technology on how mindfulness really works, and especially, and this is a session held for exclusively for women, and we did this online and we practiced meditation for about half an hour, and then some question and answers where we discussed how to sort of take out time, because, you know, everybody comes with their own notions about, oh my God, we need like 1 hour for meditation, but actually a little time to start with is also good. Of course, it will be great to have 1 hour, but if you don't, then start with 15 minutes, 20 minutes, at least start somewhere. And you know, it sort of invites you then, it catches you.
Yes, I love your practical approach, it's true. Before I used to be a little bit more rigid. You need to do 1 hour, it needs to be the formal technique, you need to just, you know, don't change anything, don't touch anything. But realistically, if you want to start spreading Osho techniques to a wider audience, it's a good way to start with education, to talk about things, and then maybe give a short taste, even though it's 5 minutes, and then encourage people to start from where they are, because the first objection is like, I have no time, 1 hour meditation. No, that's crazy. I would never be able to do it. So you don't have to start with 1 hour. You start with little, but then slowly you build it to 1 hour when you see that it's working. So yes, I think you're absolutely right there.
I mean, you know, there are two people I know who said that they have sleep issues, and we know about the Osho O technique, right? The O meditation in the night, and they're doing it regularly, and they're IBMers, and they don't really know so much about Osho. Of course, they know now that this is an Osho technique and it has worked for them. And it's easy, right? You do it 10 minutes in bed and you sleep. So it is working for them. So if I had said that you do a proper Kundalini or dynamic or Nadbhram for 1 hour, I think, they wouldn't have done it, but this has worked. And now they're quite regular with meditation. So I think this works for more people than being rigid.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful, Prachi. I love it. I love it. Okay, so I have 3 final questions. Is there anything else you would like to add or talk about, any latest projects or anything you have in mind about your work as a meditation facilitator in the company before I shoot the last 3 questions?
I think we've covered everything. I don't really have a plan, or I don't really see it as a profession. You know, all of this is happening and I'm ready to sort of go with the flow. So his wish prevails.
Okay. So the last 3 questions. The first is, what is, in your view, Osho's greatest contribution to the world?
Difficult to explain in words, but yeah, practically speaking, I think the fact that he's given some very practical, active, semi-active, passive techniques for meditation, and especially for the modern mind, which can't really sit, at least I was not okay with just sitting silently with my eyes shut, looking at my breath and being present. And I'm so, so grateful that he gave meditations like Dynamic Kundalini, Nadbhram, and many more, endless meditations. And he included everyone. I think he's the most diverse and inclusive master that I have known in the little that I know about this world. He's included everyone. You know, you can be a lover and be with Osho, and you can be a very strict meditator and be with Osho, and you can be a dancer and be with Osho, and you can be a runner and be with Osho, and you can just do, you can meditate with absolutely anything you like to do. And that is such a big gift. Usually you go to schools, or I see, because India, of course, has quite a few people who offer meditation, and most of them are very rigid about their approach. And here Osho, he has a meditation for everyone, a unique one for each one of us. And I think that is a great gift to humanity.
Wow. One of the things I love the most about this project of interviewing people for the Love Osho podcast is that every time I learn something and I hear something new, perspective of the people I talk to, and this is for me new. It's this idea of Osho as the most inclusive master. It's beautiful. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
So the second question is, what is the most beautiful gift you personally received from Osho?
I was at 22, when I first read Osho, I was already quite lost, in the sense that I had finished my studies, I was doing a job, it was a good job, and it was very clear that now the next step is marriage, being in India. And somehow marriage and kids, and that is how you live your life. You either love somebody, you get married, or you don't love somebody and then you get married. And that's how you lead your life. And I was somehow from my core, it was like, this is not, if life is only this much, this is not for me. You know, I was probably like more greedy. I wanted something more out of life. And the biggest gift from Osho to me is I have meaning in my life. And it doesn't end. Even I'm 43 today and it doesn't end. I have so much to explore within and now even outside. I'm much more in love with my family, with my friends, with my work, with life in general. I'm much more in love with the world outside, you know, as I go within. So this is the biggest gift. Else I thought that, you know, this is the end. You study, you do a job, you get married, you have kids, and it goes on like that. So that was not enough. And the biggest gift is a beautiful, meaningful, yet sort of, you know, loose, free life, which has so much joy in it.
Well, I'm touched and resonates a lot with me. Beautiful. Thank you. So the last question is, what is your favorite way to connect with Osho, to feel Osho?
Sandhya Satsang, evening meditation is my most beautiful, preferred way of connecting with Osho. Of course, he's available at all times. But yeah, that's a formal way where I really feel his presence in my heart the most. And otherwise, looking at him, if there's something happening and something, you know, something keeps happening, like there are always ups and downs that all of us go through, and I go through them too. And there are times when I just sit in front of his picture and something in me relaxes.
Wow. Okay, Fraci, look, it's been really, really fun, real pleasure, and so interesting talking to you. You have a brilliant mind, in addition to having such a pulsating heart, and you share so much love and wisdom at the same time. Thank you so much for being part of the Love Osho podcast, and thanks, Rashid, for connecting us, our dear friend, beautiful Rashid, whom I interviewed in episode 3, I think. So if anyone wants to listen to Rashid. So, Prachi, that's the end. Thank you so much and lots of love.
Thank you so very much, Suram. It has just been such a pleasure, you know, remembering Osho and my life with him. Thank you.
Thank you. Big hug. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Big hug to you as well. Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.